Time now once again to catch up with Jeff from Acela Wine. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter. Technical challenges everywhere here, unfortunately.
Yeah, mate, I feel like walking around with a zapper. You know, sort of a wake up.
Well, it's true. Maybe we should dig up Marconi and see if he can work on the problem.
Yeah, he probably could, mate.
I often think that we should, and I've forgotten his name now, dig up the Prime Minister at the time that built the Sydney Harbour Bridge, Peter, because he's the last politician we had in Australia with vision.
I'm not touching that. I'm leaving that alone.
Well, we were joking off air about having to deal with the agency of the enfeebled mind, and unfortunately most of the members belong to government or they're planners, but our Prime Minister tries, and he tries to do his best. They've made a lot less mistakes recently than they did initially, made a lot less stupid statements, which originally, as you know, caused fights in supermarkets and all sorts of when they were predicting 14 million Australians were going to get the coronavirus. So we've moved on since then, Peter.
Yeah, it looks like there might be some relief coming. They were talking about it this morning, where we could have groups of 10, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, well, of course, they're talking about opening restaurants, Peter. It's going to be very difficult to do that if you're going to have 10 people socializing in the same room.
Yeah, that's true. You sit over there. I'll put you in the bedroom. You can go in the lounge room.
Yeah, we were talking before the world of static overtook us, and I mean static, as you suggested, data stream. And of course, voice, just for our listeners so they know, voice is transmitted by data stream, and then it's translated at the end back into voice. And of course, if it doesn't get translated back into voice, it comes through as heavy static.
Yeah, it's actually called white noise.
Right, yeah, that's what we were getting, unfortunately. So we were talking about Victoria, but Peter, because we had suggested about 3 weeks ago that Victoria was likely to become the capital of the coronavirus outbreaks in Australia. And the reason we said that was purely based on their testing rate. We've talked many times about countries that are testing 50,000 people per 100,000, per million citizens that have got that amount of tests. And most of those countries got it well under control. New South Wales' testing rate is about 3,400 per 100,000 or 34,000 per million. But Victoria is only 3.2, I think, New South Wales. Victoria is only 2.4. And because their testing rate is so much lower than New South Wales, we made a guess about 3 weeks ago that you and I did, that we would not be surprised at all when and if Victoria becomes the coronavirus capital, because they're not testing enough.
Right, and guess what happened?
Guess what happened? The last 3 or 4 days, they're driving Australia's coronavirus numbers. And, you know, like they're paying millions, Peter, millions to these advisors. And all you have to do is filter a little bit. Every day, World Meter or Johns Hopkins University publishes all the statistics. And if you, all you got to do is filter them out a little bit, those countries that are testing above 50,000 per million, those that are testing above 20,000, you know, and you can see those countries that are in control and those that aren't. And unfortunately, when you've got a much lower testing rate, it eventually catches up with you. We were joking yesterday about Japan being the agency of the deluded because they're not testing hardly at all. And guess what? They have almost no cases, Peter.
All right. Yeah, okay.
If you don't test, you don't have any cases.
I'm getting a headache.
Their test rate is less than one-tenth, you know, what the rest of the world is doing. And in some cases, like in the testing, 38 to 45,000, most of the big European countries, per million, but except the UK isn't. They're in a hell of a mess, excuse the language. They're in a heck of a mess. But Japan's only testing 1,500. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, what are they doing that we're not doing?
They're not finding any cases, Peter, because they're not testing for them.
Oh, yeah, that could be true, too.
Yeah, well, it's, you can't, you know, I mean, I admire the Japanese and their industrialist, you know, attitude and success, but, you know, that doesn't seem logical when you look at what the rest of the world is doing. And I think that they would be well advised to probably ramp up their program quite a bit. But anyway, you're right, Peter, the government is going to ease things up, as we started the program with. The Prime Minister's most important curve now is the employment curve. And I'd say that's because the Finance Minister tells him several times a day, we've run out of money.
Yeah, yeah.
Giving all this money out, man, and there's none coming in, you've got to do something to get those people off the, you know, the JobKeeper and the JobSeeker and all these $4,500 grants to 17-year-old students I see in the news reports. You've got to do something. And so they're unwinding. I mean, European countries have been doing this for the last week and a half or 2 weeks, and they're still testing thousands of cases every day. You know, in Spain, 3,000 yesterday. At Italy, 1,400. France, 3,600. They've gone back to school, Peter. They realize that they got to deal with the problem. They have a problem that's very difficult to deal with because they still have outbreaks that they can't identify. We still have the odd community case, but there is in such small numbers, Peter, that we can look at that cluster and we can test everybody that
yeah.
they've been in touch with, or we can send them home for isolation, or we can shut the school as they did the other day, clean the classroom and open in another day or two, send all the classroom and the teacher home for 14 days. I mean, that's our future, Peter. China, 2 months China's been virus-free, yet it still has from a few to 30 cases every day. And that's what's going to happen to us for a long, long period of time.
Mate, one thing I did notice, I went to see my doctor last week, mm-hmm. and before I went in, the young lady said to me, may I take your temperature, please?
Yeah.
I said, yes. By all means, do that. And she had a series of questions to ask me, including had I been overseas, etc., etc. Yeah. And if I met the criteria, I could go in. In other words, if my temperature was right, I could go in. If it wasn't, I was told to go away.
Yeah, well, that shows you the importance of flu shots, Peter.
Because I've had mine.
A million people with the flu soon, and they're all going to have a temperature, but they're not going to have coronavirus. So, as we said last week, we urge everybody to go and get a flu shot.
Yeah, I've had mine.
Yes, I've had mine too, Peter, and we urge everybody to do it. It's an interesting thing. Of course, we know that the outbreaks in Russia have taken off, but there's a new thing going on in Russia, Peter. It's very dangerous for doctors. It's called assisted suicide.
Oh, good grief.
Two doctors and a ambulance attendant have fallen from windows in hospitals in Russia. And each of those three people has complained publicly, sometimes online, about lack of medical supplies and protective gear. And so in Russia, it's now called assisted suicide. Can I help you out the window, doctor?
Mm.
Oh, gee, look, sorry. I didn't realize we were five stories up.
Yeah. I don't know where I put the parachute, but you don't need it.
Damn, you don't open your mouth there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you end up taking a flying leap, Peter.
So, yes, anyway, more ways than one.
Yeah, back to this restaurant thing. It's going to be interesting. Look, the Restaurant Association's making a whole bunch of recommendations, as we have done. You know, you can, when you look at it intelligently, you can have a section of your restaurants for family groups, and they can sit together.
Yep.
Sit together. You can have, but when you have a table for four, but you're only going to have, you know, two people at it. So two people tables are going to be a lot better than four people tables, you know, for having people in the restaurant. You could cut the capacity, as we've said before, if it's licensed for 100.
Yeah.
Keep people in, you know. And the photo in the paper showed a big round table, which is good. You can separate your people. But most restaurants have small square tables. You could sit across from each other and still have social distancing. But it does have challenges, but they have to open in some manner, as we've discussed many, many times. It is just absolutely insane. We've got minimum of two classes of citizens now. Those that work for the government, pseudo-governments or essential industries, and those that are unemployed, Peter.
Yep.
They've started to open shops. In fact, the Premier said, if you think your child needs a pair of shoes, that's an essential service. But that's a bit of a, you know, sort of, gee, maybe we made a mistake sort of thing here, you know, we're going to leave it up to the people to decide. But she locked everybody down.
Yeah.
And now she's saying, well, you know, you've got to make up your own mind if it's an essential service. And but all shops should have been open. There's nothing more contagious than a supermarket. Nothing. People walking around handling food and, you know, big trolleys and handing trolleys from one person to the next person and on and on and on and on and on. So, you know, there's no possible way that walking into a dress shop or a shoe store or anything like that is any less possibility of conveying any type of virus. So I think it was silly to begin with, and it's still silly. But now apparently all shops can open.
Which is good news. I mean, we like together, you know, like how can I say? People involved with the network like to go out occasionally, sit around a table, discuss how the week was, have something to eat, that type of thing. And at the moment, we can't do it. I had a funny incident the other day where I was sitting at a bus stop and I was also having my lunch. And I got challenged as to what was I doing. I said, I'm waiting for a bus. They were trying to insist that I was just sitting around because I was having something to eat.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Well, I saw in the paper, they gave a guy a ticket for doing exactly that. He went to a takeout restaurant, and he bought his food, and he went over to the park and sat on a bench to eat it, and they fined him.
Yeah, well, I chose the bus stop.
I know. It depends, you know, on the level of intelligence of the uniformed personnel that you happen to encounter, I think, Peter. So, but anyway, it's good development. You have to unlock. You're going to get cases. We've talked for 2 months about having to learn to live with it, Peter.
And I think we're doing pretty good.
We're learning to live with it. We know where the outbreaks are. We may not have dealt with them well enough, particularly some of the aged care facilities. You know, I mean, it's a difficult problem, a very serious problem. And, you know, and the odd school, the odd hotel, and, you know, they've moved in to try and nip it in the bud, which is what we have to do. It's the way we have to deal with it.
Yep.
So, anyway, not much we can do. We just wait now, Peter, and see what happens. But we got to go back to work. There's no doubt about that.
All right. Speaking about getting back to work, I noticed... yesterday I was reading in one of the various publications that some of the wineries in the Hunter Valley are suffering from their wine has been smoked or tainted in some way. I guess you're all right?
Yes. Well, we decided not to harvest, Peter. Smoke taint has affected the Hunter Valley seriously and seriously in Victoria and lots of other areas, South Australia, a lot of vineyards burnt in South Australia. And the problem is the grapes taste perfect. But when the wine is made and the smoke taint flavor is tied up in the sugar, when it's fermented, it releases it. And it tastes smoky, Peter. It tastes more like stale smoke, stale ashtray, stale fire.
Yeah, yeesh.
So most vineyards here... some tested and had slight smoke taint and went ahead and harvested, but a very large percentage of the vineyards didn't harvest at all.
So all what you have now is perfectly all right.
Yes, because we didn't harvest anything. And here's the point, Peter. That doesn't qualify for any government assistance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, loss of crop. As we talked about, the government's grant programs are smoke and mirrors. And, you know, there are 20,000, I understand, farmers living in caravans and tin sheds waiting for government assistance. You know, and I can't see how that is less important than giving to $4,500 to a 16 and 17-year-old student that's living at home.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does. And I don't... The problem is that these broad programs are meant to curry favor with the voters, Peter. Smoke and mirrors for the people that they think they're helping, but they have to have an illusion, either give money to the voters directly, as they did to the pensioners, 4 million pensioners, or create the illusion for city people, where all the votes are, that they're actually doing something to help farmers.
Mm,
and that's basically what those programs did. They loosened the system a couple of times, Peter, because nobody qualifies.
Yeah. So what are you going to do now? I mean, you didn't harvest.
Yeah.
Does that mean you've got to plow all that in and start again?
No. The grapevines, we just didn't harvest them, didn't use them. They dropped a lot. You prune back every year anyway, right back, and then new shoots grow, you know, new, like if you see the vines in winter, they're just stubs. And
yeah,
then they
yeah.
grow new branches, which are actually vines, every year, and produce new grapes, Peter.
Right. Now I understand.
Yeah.
Now I understand. That's good. So we can continue the great supply of organic wine from you anyway.
Peter, and they're still available. We still, and of course we have also aged wines as well, and even like some of our current releases are still 3, 4, 5 years old, Peter, and they're very, very well matured. So,
I know. Yeah,
no problem there, Peter. We look forward to cellarwines.com.au. People can go online. We have a big Mother's Day special promotion going on, Peter. They can find us on Facebook at Cellar Wines. Just look us up on Facebook. And free delivery Australia-wide, Peter.
Wonderful. I tell you what, you were so right with that last batch. That went down swimmingly, shall we say. Very nice,
yeah.
Thank you.
I hope the audio is okay, Peter. You're not too good to me, but I hope it's you, because you know you're recording at your end, not this end. So, but we've had Telstra here 3 times in the last about 4 weeks, and they seem to have fixed the internet a better job than they've done on the telephone, Peter. But I think we should. Investigate our friendly little Zoom thing. And so I'm going to send you an invitation with Zoom, and once you get it up, you can just click on it, and we'll see if it works.
All right, mate, that sounds good. We'll do that later today if we can.
Yeah, sure. Okay, and Peter, there's one or two things that I know you've got a program to run there, but we'll catch up with you next week.
Oh, looking forward to it, Matt.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay.
I'll give you a jingle a bit later, too.
Yeah, okay. Talk to you later.
Thank you very much.
Okay, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.